This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is On Driven, Joy 94.9's multicultural programme. The On Driven is a symbol used across Australia to represent multiculturalism, anti-racism, and international understanding. At Joy 94.9, On Driven represents peace and understanding in a multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the programme or would like to ask any questions, SMS 0427 Joy 949, email onair@joy.org.au. Welcome to On Driven on Joy 94.9, today with Barb and Hugh. On today's show, we are talking to Shadi, who comes from Qatar. This is Shadi's second interview on Driven. The feedback from you, the listener, was that you wanted to hear more of Shadi's story. So earlier this week, we recorded another show with him before he flew back to his country for a short visit. As usual, another interesting chat coming up here on Driven today, so please stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9.
Just out? Tune in. Joy 94.9.
On Driven on Joy 94.9. We pre-recorded our show this week with Shadi, who comes from Qatar. And I started the show by asking him the usual first question. Shadi, tell us where you come from.
I was born in Qatar, but my parents are originally from Palestine.
Okay.
So
how did your parents end up in Qatar?
My dad was offered a job in Qatar, and that's how he moved. And I'm talking about like 1950s, something like that.
So quite a while ago.
Yeah, he actually did his high school degree in Qatar.
Was it easy for your parents to move to Qatar?
No. My mom actually moved there in the 70s because she didn't want to go and live there immediately.
Okay.
As early as the 40s or 50s.
Right.
Because there was nothing there.
So your father had to go there for work and leave your mother in Palestine.
Actually, she was in Syria.
Oh, back then. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Syria.
In that immediate post-World War II era, I suppose the whole region was in a lot of flux.
Yeah.
And your parents seem to have gotten caught up in that. How interesting. Do they have stories of just moving back and forth across borders and what they've missed from what they've left behind?
Well, we're talking about Palestine here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fact is the way that they had to leave their houses in Palestine is what happened is that some people came to their houses and told them that an Israeli army is passing by and they're going to kill anyone they see. So just take something for the night.
Yep.
Go away and you can come back the next day. And when they tried to go back the next day, they said, that's it.
No.
The army settled there and they brought people to live in those houses and they were never allowed to go back.
Wow, they've never been back.
Never, never officially. They did go back for a visit maybe 30 years after.
Mm-hmm.
And their houses were there and they tried to go and visit them. My mom couldn't, my dad did.
Yeah. So
they were from the same village, like in Palestine. So.
It's a horrible thing to happen to people, isn't it?
Mm.
That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you imagine your apartment in Melbourne and you're told to leave and then the next day you're in, that's it, finished, you know, you can't go back. Mm-hmm. So you lose everything.
Exactly. And one of the things that we lost, it's maybe small, but the fact that we don't know my mom's birthday date.
Wow.
So because all the birth certificates were left in the house, so we don't know, it just says 1st of January now, but the exact date, no one knows when it is.
How young was she when she was thrown out of her house that she didn't remember her own birthday?
No, she was 2 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's it's really, you can't imagine it happening to you.
No, no.
So when your mother moved to Qatar, how easy was it for her to settle down?
From what I remember, what she said, it wasn't really easy, just, she was there alone, and she didn't know anyone, so basically she just started making friends again which were neighbors and stuff. Yeah. And this is how, like, she had to start all her life again from scratch.
What about your father? I mean, how easy was it for him to settle in Qatar? Because it's not the most friendly country for people who come in, is it?
Yeah, but my dad didn't find it really difficult. He, his personality is very outward and friendly, and he never had any problems with anyone. So, right. Like, he didn't have any problems making friends and meeting people. And because of his job, he that was part of his job, because he worked in an account and he used to meet a lot of people there.
Yes, yeah. Eventually, he got his own business as well, didn't he?
Yes, he became an auditor, and then he opened his own office.
Now, the thing you told me was your father had to be your sponsor. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Why did you need a sponsor?
In Qatar, anyone that is not local needs a sponsor.
But it's you were born there.
Yeah, but I'm not considered a Qatari or a local there, even if I was born there.
Because your parents weren't born there?
Because my parents are not Qataris.
Mm-hmm. And there's even no way for them to become, they can't become naturalized citizens like you might become an Australian?
No, no. There is something in the constitution that says that if you live in Qatar for 30 years continuously, you may be granted the...
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And I don't know anyone who did, like, apply for it after living there for such a long time and got it.
Yeah, yeah. Was your parents' marriage arranged? Is that how they found each other? Or did they actually find each other somewhere?
Well, my parents are cousins.
Okay.
That's how they knew each other.
Yep.
But it wasn't really arranged. My dad was 15 years older than my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was time for him to get married, because also it took him quite a long time to do so.
Yep.
He thought that...
that cousin.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
It's... We have a small funny story or the fact that we have a picture of my parents when my dad was about 16 years old holding my mom as a baby.
Oh, wow. What really? A great family photo. Yeah.
Well, that's the first. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
It's actually very common all over the world, cousin marriages. They're the preferred marriages in most places, actually. It's only in the weird West where we think cousins are off limits. In most of the world, it's the preferred because it's people you know, it's people you trust, and you know their family, you know.
Yeah.
But we don't actually allow first cousins to marry, do we?
I don't know about Australian law on that. In the U.S., some states allow it and some don't.
Oh, okay.
I heard it's not allowed here, but... Mm. I think it depends on the state.
Yeah.
So you had a big family, a lot of brothers and sisters, and your father had to sponsor everyone.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when you left school or university and had to start working? What happens then?
Then I need to transfer my sponsorship from my dad to my employer.
Right. So your employer basically has a hold on you, basically.
Holds the reins, let's say.
So the sponsorship, explain it. You know, what does it entail?
Sponsorship means that it's the person who basically takes care of everything in my life and controls everything in my life.
When you say everything, I mean,
I'm
just mention a few things that this person controls.
Like, if I want to leave the country, I need the permission from my sponsor. If I want to renew my driving license, I need the permission from my sponsor. So it could be something simple or something really important. Anything, any step we do needs a permission.
So if you annoy your employer sponsor, he can get very awkward and say no.
Exactly. And it happens all the time.
Does it?
And it could get worse because the sponsor also has the right to deport us.
Deport you?
Yeah.
Really?
All they need to do is give us a 1 week notice.
Wow.
And then we need to leave.
Mm-hmm. And where would you go? Given that you were born there, your family's there, where would you go?
Well, in my case, I have a Jordanian citizenship, so the only way I could go is Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not your country.
No, no. I've only been to Jordan once before I go to college. I was 12 years old then. And it's only for formalities because I had to go there and get my own passport.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going to have to explain to our listeners how you can not have been to Jordan until you were 12 once and then you went to college, but you're a citizen there and not in Qatar where you were grown up. And so, yeah, I think we need an explanation for this.
It gets very complicated, doesn't it?
It does. But
were you confused as a child? Mm.
In a way, like, we always been told that we're Palestinians, you know, mm-hmm. and then we realized that there's Jordan,
mm-hmm.
that we have to call ourselves also Jordanians.
Right.
And because my mom's family went to Syria from Palestine,
yep.
our summer holidays were spent in Syria, not Jordan even.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
Sounds very complicated to me.
Yeah.
But we'll come back to your story very soon. And what Babs has just asked you to try and explain,
mm-hmm.
We will hear about very soon.
Gay Station. Play our station. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon. You're here with Hugh and Barb and our guest Shadi today. And we were chatting earlier about he's a Jordanian citizen, but he grew up in Qatar and he lives in Australia and his parents are Palestinian. And so how on earth did you become a Jordanian citizen?
Well, it's I got the citizenship through my dad.
Okay.
Because he became Jordanian while he was in Qatar too. And that's because the Jordanian government decided to give the Palestinians or some Palestinians their citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Well-educated Palestinians? Is that how your father got in? Because clearly you come from a professional background. Mm-hmm. And did they pick and choose, we want you, but not you, and we want you, but not you? Or was your father part of a lottery? Or how does this work for stateless people?
Well, they chose the Palestinians based on the region where they came from in Palestine.
Okay.
And because we came from a region called Jaffa.
Okay.
That was basically why he was chosen.
One of the regions that were allowed Jordanian citizenship.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it a bit of a relief for your family, given that they had been stateless and at the whim of Qatar would be sent anywhere? Yeah, was it definitely a bit of a relief?
Yeah, you can say that we were one of the lucky ones. At least we became citizens of a country.
Yeah, because there are still people, aren't there? Aren't there still Palestinians who are not citizens? They're into their third and fourth generation of being stateless.
Yes. And there are some Palestinians who were granted travel certificates mm-hmm. from Syria, Egypt, and Lebanon.
Okay.
So it's just a way for them to travel, but doesn't mean that they're citizens or they don't have any rights.
Yeah, nobody's responsible
they
for
even
them.
They need a visa to go to that country.
Crazy.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, so you really are one of the lucky ones.
Mm. Yeah.
You actually went to Jordan, though, for a while, didn't you?
Yeah, I went there to go to college.
Right. And how did you find it?
It was from Qatar. It was amazing. Like, it was the first time I live on my own and without the family around me. Well, not for the first year, because my sister came with me the first year.
To make sure you were a good boy.
To make sure that I'm taking care of them.
I bet it was more your job to make sure she was a good girl.
Well, no. She's amazing. You know, like, she's like my other mom.
Mm-hmm.
She's obviously older than you.
Yeah, she's 11 years older.
Okay.
And she's actually the one who raised me, because when I was born, like, after I was born, my mom got pregnant again within, like, 3 months, and my sister is actually the one who took care of me all the time.
Yeah.
So you're pretty close to her, so she was the best person to go with you to Jordan.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Well, you said your sister was with you for the first year, so mm-hmm. what happened after that? Was it freedom at last and go wild?
Yeah, in the way, like, I learned how to take care of myself because I never had to do that before with the family and with my mom and everyone. So my sister, like, just took care of me for a while and showed me how everything goes. And I was also 17 when I moved to Jordan, so I couldn't even open a bank account in my name. So I had to use her ATM card to be
able
to...
How old have you got to be before you can open a bank account?
18.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I had to wait for a year.
Oh.
Yeah. I was a minor.
Right.
Yep.
So you studied in Jordan. Your sister left. What, you know, you were on your own. What happened?
Well, this is when where the fun started. Can't really say that it was crazy or as I see here with college students where they go out and just drink and go wild and all. Jordan, although it was more liberal than Qatar.
You've got frog in your throat.
Yeah, I know. Just the emotions of the memories. It's more liberal than Qatar, but it was still very strict in a way. So we couldn't really go crazy in terms of partying and clubbing or anything like that as it happens here. But at least we were able to go out every day and smoke shisha like, with friends and just like do stuff that we couldn't do in Qatar.
That normal college students do.
Yeah.
Was it around about this time that you realized you were a little bit different?
It was earlier than that when I realized.
Okay.
But I didn't really accept it. I tried to fight it in a way. I almost got engaged when I was 21 or 20. Thank God that didn't happen because it would have been a really big mistake. But yeah,
when you were in Jordan, did you go out anywhere and meet anyone, or was there anywhere to go in Jordan?
Officially, no. There is only one gay cafe, but just like place you can go have a drink and coffee or smoke shisha. It wasn't a club or a bar or something.
Did you have any boyfriends in Jordan?
I did. I met my ex when in 1999. We were together for 4 years until I had to leave and go back to Qatar.
Mm-hmm. What is in Jordan, what's the law like towards the gay community? Is it quite liberal or is it completely no-no?
Well, officially, it's not illegal to be gay in Jordan. So there is nothing in the constitution that says it, or there is no specific law. But usually the police, they know how to get people. Especially now, like recently, I've heard stories about police tracking guys on Facebook. Depends who they're connected with. And if they catch someone, they make them tell them their names of others. And then they send letters to their families and out them to everyone. So
really?
Yeah.
Is it the kind of situation where most men do wind up marrying and having families and then they have sex with other men on the side?
Yes, exactly.
So it's more of an activity than a life choice?
Yeah.
So what happened when you met someone? Was it similar? Did you have to hide everything you did?
Well, I couldn't tell anyone, of course, that I met someone or anything. I kept making excuses that I'm going out. Well, you don't need to know where I'm going out. So, like, stop
That's
asking.
Why it's a private life.
Yeah.
When you say go out, would you actually go out to a restaurant or a bar, or would you just stay home?
We mostly stayed at home, especially in the beginning, until we became more like comfortable actually going out. We had places to go where no one would look at us and suspicions.
Like, yeah.
Why are you going out? Especially that there is quite an age difference between us.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so that would raise suspicions.
Yeah.
An older guy and a younger guy, why are they together?
Yeah, exactly. And they would immediately like go to the right spot.
Yeah.
There must be some.
Yeah. Is there any gay organizations in Jordan?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing at all.
What about on the internet? Is it?
No, nothing is blocked on the internet. You can still go to all the gay websites, but that's the only thing. Like, there is no gay rights, there's no one can demand anything. And the only guy who tried to ask for gay rights was deported out of Jordan.
Oh, okay.
Actually exiled, I would say, because he's Jordanian.
Yeah, wow. So that must have been a very brave move when you first started expressing interest in, you know, here's somebody you're attracted to. Like, how do you let them know? How did you and your boyfriend get together?
Well, we met online.
Okay.
So that's mainly the main reason, like the only way to meet guys there in a safe way.
Yep.
Otherwise, like to meet in the streets or something is quite dangerous because you never know if they're police or...
Yeah. Mm. Oh. I think I'd be afraid also online that, you know, it's the police or it's somebody trolling through websites and then they meet you and they slap handcuffs on you and drag you back to your mother and say, do you know what your boy's been doing?
Well, that happened in Qatar. They do exactly what you just said. They go on gay websites, pretend that they have a date and...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Very interesting. We'll come back to the story very soon.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is Orange Ribbon with Barb and Hugh. And our guest today is Shadi, who comes from Qatar, although it's a little bit mixed up story. And before the break, we were just talking about the time he lived in Jordan and a little bit of freedom he had there from Qatar. But when you went back to Qatar, what was it like?
Well, after 7 years in Jordan, Qatar changed in a really big way, and like the city just got bigger and some rules have changed, and like especially the fact that alcohol was allowed in Qatar within those 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Before that it wasn't.
Who was allowed to drink alcohol?
Non-Muslims. Mm-hmm.
So how do they determine who's Muslim and who's not Muslim?
Well, for anyone to be able to drink alcohol or to buy alcohol, they need to have a permission from the government.
Right.
So basically, you apply and you have to give them your IDs and like something there would tell that whether you're a Muslim or not.
So as long as I've got ID that says I'm a Christian, they would give me a permit and I can drink.
Yes, yeah.
But is there anywhere to go to drink?
Yeah, there are bars and clubs.
Is there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you sort of get, like here, when you're over 18, you get the wristband? Like if you're a Muslim and don't have permission to drink, do they let you in the bar, but they won't serve you?
Well, and generally, most of the bars were a bit relaxed about that because why would they, like, kick someone out?
Yeah, they want the money.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I never had any problems going there and having alcohol and drinking.
Now, don't you think?
The permission.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, don't you think you were skating on thin ice there? Because it's pretty harsh if you get caught.
Yes, I was, but I thought it's worth it in a way. Like, life in Qatar, like, could be really difficult, like, in general. So you need something like that to just
relax.
Yeah, relax.
What is
it? Sorry, I was going to ask, when you moved back, did you move back in with your family?
Yes. Yeah.
So, going back to the drinking, because I'm really interested now, what's the penalty for someone who's like yourself, who's Muslim, and if you were caught drinking, what happens?
Of course, the police will catch me, and the punishment will be 70 lashes and deportation.
70 lashes.
Yes.
I mean, that would have killed you, wouldn't it?
Well, I never tried, so thank God. So.
But did they announce, you know, we've caught these two guys and we're going to lash them?
Sometimes they do, but not regularly. I know two guys who had it, who've been lashed. One of them was local and one of them, although he wasn't Muslim, but He was caught in a fight while he was drunk, so they gave him the punishment anyway.
Antisocial behavior.
Yeah.
So the two people that you knew, did you actually see them after getting the lashes?
Yes. Yeah.
So what state were they in?
It wasn't like, as you might imagine, like with a really big whip and someone like a monster just whipping them in the back. There are quite rules about it, and usually, like, they have to use a stick that shouldn't be, like, longer, more than a certain length and width.
Right.
And the guy who's giving the punishment shouldn't, let his arm go above his shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, basically, it's just, like, it's more like the act itself than the pain of it. You know?
It must still be painful, though.
Yeah.
It is painful, but I think it's like the humiliation in a way.
Yeah, it's more meant to shame than to pain.
Exactly.
And would parents, would families be really shamed if you had gotten caught? Would your parents have freaked out?
Definitely, yeah. I have no idea how they would react, but I'm sure it would have been really bad.
You're not going to test it?
No.
So you would get these 70 lashes and then be deported?
Yeah.
To where?
Home country. So if it happened to me, I would go to Jordan.
Right. And Jordan have to take you in?
Yes. And because the laws in Jordan doesn't punish that act, they wouldn't really care about it.
Right.
It's like if I was in Aussie in Qatar and they give me that punishment and deport me back to Australia, they wouldn't really care about it here.
Yeah.
Just because I had a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You'd become home a national hero in this country. He took the lash for a beer.
No, I've got the giggles. But going serious again. In Qatar, you've actually said that some of your friends were deported.
Yes.
But they didn't drink or anything. They were changing jobs.
Yes. Those friends were Jordanians. And because Qatar and Jordan has some political problems now, they don't like Jordanians anymore. They just want any reason to deport them. And one of those reasons is that when you change jobs, you need to get a security clearance from the government, and this is what they use against them. So basically, the deportation would be for a reason, as I think it's for security reasons, and that's it.
I suppose in the post 9/11 world, anything can be said. Yeah. Security reasons.
Yeah,
it's a horrible way to live, though, isn't it? I mean, just changing jobs, and you could end up, that's it, out of the country and living in a different country.
Yeah. You know. And my friends were exactly like me, born in Qatar, went to school in Qatar. Some of them, they actually went to college in Qatar. So they never actually been to Jordan other than maybe for a visit every month, every year. I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll come back to Shadi's story very soon.
Joy.org.au. Listen to Joy 94.9 online. Joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. You're here with Hugh and Barb and our guest Shadi, and we've been chatting about all sorts of things. One of the things that we've touched on briefly is, well, he's obviously a gay man because here he is on Joy 94.9. And he had a boyfriend while living in Jordan, but we've now moved with him back to his family home in Qatar. Where can you be a gay man while living in your family home in Qatar?
Not officially, of course.
No.
Yeah.
So how do you negotiate that transition to you were all independent in Jordan and now you're back home and you'd had a boyfriend for 4 years and now you can you? Did you?
No. Well, because I knew that I can't fight it, I thought it's a lost battle. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to even try.
Mm-hmm. You don't have one of those heart-to-heart talks with Dad, I want to tell you something.
Oh, no. not in that subject, definitely.
No.
Yeah.
So it's totally taboo in your country.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Right.
And it's not like of course I had my own, secrets and everything, but, in everything else, it was just a normal life. I would go out with friends and everything. Mm. It just happened that my friends are always guys and same guy sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But that's not abnormal in a Muslim country, though, is it?
No. That's one of the reasons why no one really suspected anything, by just going out with guys.
Yeah.
Because this is how
life
it happens.
Is yeah.
You're only expected to be with male friends.
Yeah.
It's a bit bad to have female friends there. So I guess that was one of the benefits.
That's a benefit for you then.
did they try to talk about when you're going to get married, Shadi? You're getting a bit old there, Shadi. When are you going to get married, Shadi? There's a beautiful cousin over there, Shadi.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And every time my mom goes for a holiday, back to Syria or something, comes back with a list of names and sometimes pictures.
How do you deal with that?
I just tell her that I'm not ready.
Okay. And she's okay with that for now?
Now she knows that, I can't even afford it in a way, even if I want to. Getting married in the Middle East is extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
why is it expensive?
Well, The groom pays for everything, all the expenses.
Okay.
The wedding, the ceremony, the like preparing the house, furniture or to rent or buy.
Are there gift payments to the wife's family as well?
And that too. There's the dowry.
Yep.
That you pay in cash, and there's a gift that usually is 50% of that dowry in gold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So basically, when we were doing the math, at least see how much it will cost me to get married, it was something around like an average wedding or marriage would cost around $60,000.
Mm-hmm. So and you're safe for a while.
That's like, yeah, really like on the minimum in a way.
Yeah,
I'm surprised anyone gets married.
Yeah, well, sometimes like, and recently some people are started to really like ask for nothing, no dowry, just to, because the non-married, unmarried people there, numbers is getting higher and higher.
Yeah,
because traditionally it would have been as the family took in the resources to marry off a daughter, they would then turn around and hand it off to the son to hand to the next family. And so it was a big circle, but now with nobody doing it.
So it must be very expensive for a Muslim man who has 2, 3, or 4 wives.
Well, you can't really do it unless you can afford it.
Because I know a Muslim guy and his father's got 4 wives.
No, they must be really rich.
And well, he's
I don't really know, but
well, he has 32 brothers and sisters. That's a big family.
That is.
I thought my family was big.
How big is your family?
I have 5 brothers and 2 sisters.
Okay.
That's the problem. Only 2 sisters. You need equal numbers to take in the dowry so that the brothers can get married. Mm.
But actually, that money actually goes to the to
the
my
couple?
Sister, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
We don't touch it. We can't take it. Mm-hmm. And we're not supposed to take it. That's her money. That has, in a way, it's also her security.
Yep.
In case of that marriage didn't work out.
Yeah.
Now tell us, one of your family did find out you were gay.
Yeah.
Tell us the story.
It's my eldest brother. He checked the history on my dad's computer, and I used it to check some of
what you were doing.
Some websites.
Why didn't you clear the history?
And I didn't even know that there's a history back then.
You do now, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. You learn by your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened?
So, he asked me the first time, who went to that website, and I thought, I'll just lie and say, I don't know, I had some friends over, and maybe one of them was trying to be funny or something. But it's quite a long story. I'll try to make it as short as possible. He logged in to the same website I checked and managed to have a chat with me, asked me personal questions, and I answered all of them honestly, including how many brothers and sisters I had, what does my dad work. Yeah, exactly. And I didn't give my real name. I gave a different name during that chat. But
he knew it was you.
He knew. And 2 days later, he called me and he was like, hi, how are you? And he used that name I gave him online.
Aww.
And he thought, this is it. I'm trapped.
Yeah.
You're
Did you
dead.
Really think your whole life would end right then and there?
It was one of the most difficult moments, really. And I couldn't talk. He was calling my mobile and I thought, maybe I should buy some time. I told him my battery's dying. Let me go back home and call you from there. On the way, I was still trying to find a way to get out of this. And then I realized there is no way.
Yeah.
You must have been going through hell.
Yeah. It's one of the longest trips I had. But I had a chat with him when I went back home. And he said, what's going on? Are you gay? He said, yes.
Hmm?
I said, okay. I'm going to hang up now and call you back in 3 days once I think about this. He sent me an email a couple of days later saying that maybe I should go back to Qatar because I was in Jordan back then.
Yeah.
And just see a psychiatrist and maybe have the family around me and get their support about this.
Mm-hmm.
My answer to him was, this is what I am. It's not going to change. if you accept it, great. If not, you're going to still be my eldest brother. Mm-hmm. And I hope you, like, it's not going to change the relationship between us. So he sent me again saying that, listen, I think I was, like, I made a mistake in my last email. I know what you are and how you can change it and everything. And he told me then that while he was in London, he had a couple of gay friends. So he knows that being gay is not, doesn't mean that you're a bad person or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fact that he feels, in a way, sad that I'm going ahead for a difficult life.
Yeah.
Like, not being mm-hmm. able to be mm-hmm. myself in that society. And,
mm-hmm.
and he was quite supportive.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah. Is he sort of like a father figure, like your sister helped raise you? He must be much older than you.
Yeah, he's not really that. Actually, like, I never really had a close relationship with him mm-hmm. because...
He was so much older.
He was so much older, and by the time I was aware of the world, he was in college.
Yeah.
And he spent a very long time in college until he finished. So I think the first time we lived in the same house was when I went back from Jordan to Qatar.
Wow.
And I was 24 years old.
Yeah, and he already knew your secret at this point.
And he, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Melbourne. I mean, it took you 4 years to get your visa to come here.
Yeah.
Why 4 years?
Well, most of it was the application itself, the process. And when finally I got most of the approvals, they required that I prove that my English is perfect good. Enough to be able to come and live here.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me to get a level 7 out of 9.
Right.
Which I don't know if anyone here can. They needed me to speak proper English.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why it took me so long is I had to keep taking that test over mm-hmm. and over. I did it 5 times. And it always the spoken test that made me fail.
Yeah.
And I realized that I was talking like almost the way I'm talking mm-hmm. now. But they wanted me to speak in proper English, like in grammar and vocabulary, full words, no slang, nothing like that.
Mm.
Like no Australian has ever spoken.
Well, I can't say that.
But now that you're...
As a migrant, I can say that.
Now that you're here, life is good?
No, yeah, it's great. Yeah, I love the city. I love Australia.
You love Melbourne?
I love Melbourne.
Okay.
And you picked Australia on purpose?
The decision was because nothing... I wish I can say it's because I was in love in Australia before, but I would be lying if I said that. It wasn't because Australia was one of a few countries that allowed me to immigrate.
Yep.
It was either here or Canada back then.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I don't want to live in a cold country.
Yep.
So I thought it's Australia.
Mm. Very good.
There you go.
Well, unfortunately, it's the end of the show.
Wow.
But thank you very much for coming back and talking to us.
Thank you, too.
And hopefully all the questions that people had about you from the last show have all been answered. And thank you.
Thank you, too, for asking me to be here again.
You're welcome.
It's our great pleasure. Lovely to meet you.
That's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our thanks to Shadi for taking time out to have another chat with us. Coming up next is the wonderful Adam Todd with Bandcamp. Another great show, I'm sure. I love his shows. Orange Ribbon will be back again at the same time, 2 o'clock next Saturday afternoon, with more insights into our LGBTIQ community here in Australia and, of course, around the world. From Barb and myself, thank you very much for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.